I want to talk to you tonight about a very familiar story, but I've just had some extra thoughts about it, and I don't know that any of them are particularly new, but it's wonderful when you revisit something that you haven't read for a while and it kind of dawns on you again, or something new pops out to you. So me and Joe aren't homeowners yet, and we're not even really looking at buying a home at the moment. But last week I had a dream that we got offered this golden opportunity to go and look at some land that we would eventually build a house on. So we went and thought, oh wow, this sounds brilliant. You'll imagine our surprise when we got to where the land was, and it was waterfront. It was literally the most beautiful land, beautiful sea out the front, and it was just what I love living by the sea, and we do live pretty close to the sea where we are now, even in our rental, but this was just the most waterfront that you could possibly get. It was literally on the beach. It was amazing, beautiful, and I was pretty taken back by it. Until I kind of thought, hang on, we would literally be buying sand. That's what we'd be buying. We'd be buying sand and the water in front of us. And I thought I was asking a really logical question when I said to the person who was showing us, so what the heck happens when the tide comes in? So like, does our land suddenly, you know, is it so many meters and then suddenly it's this, that's all that we own? And of course, being the, you know, the real estate person that she was, the lady in this case, really minimized my question, you know, gave me some spin, made me think that I was asking something really silly, and just kind of, yeah, just sort of dropped it all together, and I thought, okay, all right, I felt convinced. And she said how quickly that all the plots were going and that we were really going to miss out if we hesitated. I was thinking, oh gosh, okay. And sure enough, I looked to the left and to the right of me, and you could see plots along that way, along that way, that had sold signs in them, and other people looking at other plots of land along this beach and looking very interested and kind of almost signing on the dotted line right there and then. So I sort of felt a bit pressure, and I thought, maybe I'm just being silly. Maybe everybody else seems okay with this. We really don't want to miss out. Anyway, I woke up and I thought, well, that was really daft, you know, as if that would happen. And I also thought, hang on, this kind of rings a bell to me. And I had that familiar Sunday school song, and I am going to sing it. It goes, the foolish man built his house upon the sand. The foolish man built, yeah. And the floods came down, and the rains came down, and the floods came up, yeah. Anyway, so that's immediately what I thought when I woke up. I went, wow, how bizarre. I haven't thought of that song in years. And I actually had to YouTube it to make sure I had the right tune and everything. But it certainly was the first thing that I thought of when I woke up. Didn't really think about it too much. And then that night I came home and thought, actually, do you know what? I'm going to read that again, that story, because it's something that, as I say, I haven't thought of really in years. And maybe I have read it, but I haven't read it intentionally. I haven't gone to it and thought, I'm going to read that story. And of course, I'm talking about Matthew chapter 7 from verse 24. And it's called The Wise and Foolish Builders in the version that I have. And it says, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the wind blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. In the version that I watched on YouTube, it said, with a great splat. That was quite funny for a kid. So, when Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. As I said, I went back and I read this intentionally, just this story. And I don't think I'd ever really done that before. I've read the Sermon on the Mount and I've heard this story many times. But I love, just as an aside, that you can go back to something and read it afresh with different eyes. And again, I think it's really wonderful that God's word is living Because no matter how old you are or how established you are in reading the Bible, how many times you've read it maybe from cover to cover, it can always hold something new, or it can always encourage you with something that maybe you've forgotten or other things have come in. And I feel like its revelation is unending and its application to our life is continual. And I love that. It's really great. That was one thing that stuck out to me just reading this again. And also, how different things are when you read them as an adult or with a little bit more maturity or with a little bit more intention. And I'd heard this many times in Sunday school, particularly in the song as well. Probably at that time, the level at which it was explained to me was completely appropriate for my level of understanding and also for my application of it to my life. So what I took from it as a kid was, if you believe in Jesus, you're building your life on a strong foundation. If you don't believe in Jesus, you're building your life on something that will not stand. That's kind of the crux of what I took from it when I was a kid. And I guess you do get that when you read it. If you don't believe in Jesus, if you don't believe that he is who he says he is, or he did what he said he did, then you're unlikely to follow all the other things that he talks about and the way that you should live and treat people. And even if you do, I think we know that being a good person isn't good enough, because being good outside of God or being good without Jesus isn't good enough. So we know that as well. But having read it again afresh, it suddenly dawned on me that what it actually says is that if you hear Jesus' words and you do not put them into practice, then you're being foolish. So my first thought around this, and again, it's not new, but so being a wise builder is not just believing in Jesus, but it's living out what he says. Because many people believe that Jesus lived, and I don't know if you caught the last days of Jesus, which was on the weekend over the Easter weekend. I know there was lots on social media about it from both Christians and people that don't necessarily believe, but people in that documentary talked about Jesus as a historical figure. They had no problem believing that he lived and walked the earth. But obviously, we believe much more about that. We talked already tonight about the supernatural element and the fact that he didn't just die, he rose again, and that there was purpose in that, in terms of what that means for us in eternity when we believe that he did that. But I guess it's our natural response as well, once we believe that, and we've talked about this probably in sermons that I've gone in the last couple of months and also Wednesday Night Live, that it's our natural response to want to follow in his footsteps. And actually, Jen, you talked tonight about actually when you believe in God, you obey what he says. That's part of believing. And it's not because that part gets us into heaven, but because we're becoming more like Christ. So we've died to our old nature and we've taken on the nature of Christ. We're becoming more like him. And I was reading a bit about a guy called John Milton Fogg. Apparently he's a really famous author, and he gave some insight into the word belief, which again we've talked about, but I quite liked what he said. So he said that the true definition of belief is be and leaf, so two parts of the word. Be comes from being, which is the state of existence, means to live. And the leaf part is linked to a word that means love. So when you put the two together, it talks, I guess, about the idea that belief means to be in love with something, or that it plays out in some way in your life, because it takes concrete knowledge of something, knowing something, and mixes it with a function of the heart. So true belief is something that is both in your mind and in your heart, and it comes out and is expressed in your actions and your life, in what you do. And I don't know about you, but when I think of sand, going back to the idea of sand and me having this dream about building on sand, I think of the beach, That's natural for an Australian, I think, to think about the beach when you think about sand. Although having been to the Breakwater Beach quite a lot over the last couple of weeks, I'm getting to see the benefit of a pebble beach with a toddler. No sand in nappies, no sand in mouths, like was in on the holiday when we went to Australia. Quite nice to have a pebbly beach. But if you ask me, what was that? If you ask me whether I'd love a house on the beach, I would say yes. I do love being by the beach. I love being by the sea. It sounds appealing to me. And something, I think the idea of a nice beach house would be something I'd go for, a hammock, the whole idea of Hakuna Matata, you know, no worries. It's a great option for me. But reading this story, I sort of thought, and I wondered if maybe building on the rock is not always the most attractive option. Because if you turn it the other way, building on the sand might be a really attractive option. So therefore, building on the rock may not always be the most attractive option. Because when Jesus says, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man, it's important to think, what does he mean by these words? And in some ways you could think generally, it could mean anything that he teaches about on how to live and how to treat each other. But specifically, this little section at the end of Matthew 7 comes at the end of chapters 5, 6, and 7, which is the Sermon on the Mount. And obviously in that sermon, Jesus addresses many things. It probably couldn't get through it in a whole week worth of Wednesday Night Lives every night. We're not going to cover that and do it justice. But I did find a little summary, which I think John put up, which I quite liked. I just put summary of Sermon on the Mount. I quite like this one. So it kind of lays out some of the things that Jesus talked about in very general terms across chapters 5, 6, and 7. So you can see there's a lot that he talks about and he teaches about. And just in chapter 7, you've got not judging others. You've got focusing on the plank in your own eye before trying to remove the speck in your brother's. Always doing to others what you'd have them do to you. Praying always, asking, seeking, and the door will be open. There's teaching about good fruit being the evidence for a life in line with Christ, particularly with regard to false prophets. So there's a lot, even just in this chapter, in chapter 7. But if you go back to saying that sometimes it might seem that being wise isn't the most attractive option, if a person were to look at the way that Christ actually lived, and what he did while he was on earth, what he talked about while he was on earth, it's a really high standard. It's pretty tough when you think about it. It can be tough to even think, oh my goodness, so I'd have to do this, this, and this. He's challenging, like we've talked about in his words. I think about the rich young ruler and how he dealt with him and what he said to him and how the rich young ruler turned away and thought, well, I can't do that. So it's not necessarily easy on the surface when you look at the things that Jesus teaches. It's a life that costs us something. It's, you know, it's denying ourselves. It's laying down our own agendas and plans and giving the reins over to him. Denial of ourselves, looking inwardly, and then being upfront when we get it wrong. And I think, nice little beach life existence might actually be quite attractive, you know, living on the sand, Hakuna Matata, no worries. But of course, that is here and now thinking. That's not thinking about all the wonderful things about the Christian life and the abundance of living with Jesus and following his example. But I'm sure you can see what I'm getting at. When somebody looks at it on the outside and thinks, phew, it's a life of rules, it's a life of things I can't do, it's a life of don'ts, it doesn't perhaps look that attractive all the time. Okay? And while we're looking at attractiveness, I just love Berry Head. I love the breakwater. I love a great view. I love things that look nice and please my eye, great man-made things. I love watching Grand Designs. Does anybody watch that program, Grand Designs? Yeah. You just get pleasure out of seeing wonderful structures and being made. But I bet that none of us, prove me wrong, but I bet none of us has ever uttered the words, oh, that is a great foundation you've got on that house there. Has anybody ever uttered those words? Maybe a builder. When you're building the house and nothing else is on there, you might say, yeah, that's a great foundation. it's not the most attractive part of a house. And actually, it's not even the visible part of a house. And so this was my next thought, that if Jesus doesn't really stress in this passage the difference between what the houses looked like, because he doesn't talk about the difference in the building materials, he doesn't talk about the difference in what they were made of or how they were structured, or that this one had beautiful windows, or, you know, Joe could tell you all about the wonderful staircases and things that him and Dave make in Dartmouth and the lovely houses over there. But he doesn't talk about any of those things. He talks about the foundation. That's the difference. And so the foundation comes into its own during the storm. That's when we see the difference. And I'm sure you probably know that houses in Australia, in some parts, is prone to cyclones. Not where I'm from, but in some parts, it's tropical. And so houses have to be built to withstand really strong winds up to 310 kilometres an hour. And the key to protecting against what they call uplift pressure, which is created by cyclones, is to ensure that all the elements of the house are securely fixed together and down to the foundations. And they've just had Cyclone Debbie over there, which was obviously quite destructive. But in 2011, they had a cyclone called Yasi. And what they found was there was a really, really small amount of damage to the houses that were built in this way, taking this recommendation into account. Any house that was built without those, or without regard to those recommendations, or was built earlier, maybe like 1980s back, was likely to have damage. It had quite a lot of damage in those types of houses. And I love, this was what the kind of summary of what you should build a house like to be cyclone proof. Breezy with a sturdy core. That's the trick to houses that can withstand cyclone force winds. Breezy with a sturdy core. I'd love to be breezy with a sturdy core. That's what I want to be like. I want to be easygoing, you know, not blown over in the wind, not somebody who gets really anxious about things. We know all of these things because we read that that's how we're meant to be as Christians. We're not meant to worry, not meant to be anxious. We are meant to be breezy, but with a sturdy core. The reason we can be breezy is because we've got that sturdy core. So when we're tested, when life's beating us up and when everything seems to be going wrong and being good is really hard, that's when the strong foundation and the fact that we've built our lives on Jesus and his way of life, that's when it comes to the fore. That's when the foundation comes to the fore. And I find that it's probably within those times that people say, there's something different about you. And we've talked about the day-to-day life, and perhaps, actually, like Jesus doesn't stress in this illustration, the difference between what the houses look like, perhaps I don't look that different in the day-to-day from my friends or a person next to me. But it will show in times of testing, I believe. It will show when things are hard, because where do I go to if I've got no foundation in Christ? You know, what? It's entirely me. It's entirely up to my own strength in building. But when our foundation is in Jesus, and actually we know that we're following his way of life, it's not about us anymore. It's about that strong core. And I guess if we're thinking ultimately what we're going to be leaning on when the end of the days is here, it's not our own good works, because if that good work's not built upon the foundation of Jesus, then it's not going to stand the test of eternity. And when you build with him as the cornerstone, it's him that holds the whole structure of your life together and everything that you've done here while you're on earth. And I always go back to this book because I just really like, I love reading the word and what it says in there, and I like to get a different perspective from this book as well, which is the Who book from Paul Langham. And it says here, Paul. Paul, that's right. There's no point paying me lip service and pretending to be my follower if your fine words make no difference to the way you live. That's like building a house on a beach with no foundations. The storm tide sweeps in and away goes your house. Who would ever do that? Everyone knows that a building needs strong foundations. Life's the same, and I'm the best foundation anyone can have. My words are bedrock, so make sure you build on them and live by them. They're the perfect foundation for a strong life. So I love that. Jesus and his words are the best foundation anyone can have. Mm-hmm. And we can look at ourselves as wise. I don't always think of myself as wise, but I can look at myself as wise if I'm building on a foundation of Jesus and what he says. Not because I'm particularly talented at building or because I'm particularly good at being good, but because of him. He's the strong rock. He's what's going to sustain me. He's my strength. And it's the only life that will last into eternity. I find that really encouraging, knowing that, yeah, when the storms come, that my foundation is in him. And so I wanted us, as we enter into prayer tonight, to think about somebody in our life that we know who knows Jesus. Because again, this passage, when I read it, suddenly dawned on me, oh my goodness, okay, so this is talking about people who know Jesus or think they know Jesus, but have looked at the way that he lived and have not chosen to follow that yet. And I like to use the word yet because I think that's hopeful and optimistic. So I think we all probably know people like that. Know people who've heard, who see that we believe, who know that we go to church, but haven't yet chosen to live that way themselves. And I just want us to pray for those people tonight, because they're the people on my heart at the moment. And when I read this, I could think of people that I thought, oh, you probably don't even know that you're being foolish. And I thought of that verse in the psalm that said, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. And I don't know that they even think that they're being foolish, because the idea of foolishness and wisdom in the Bible is very different to the idea of world's wisdom and world's foolishness. So perhaps it's not even something that they think is foolish. They wouldn't think that, I don't think. But I'd like us to pray for them, that there will be something in their life that makes them think, oh, I need to have a little bit more of a look into this Jesus. Or that it's a radical transformation. And I believe that can happen. And you've probably had people in your life that it has happened for. But I want to see that more and more in the people that I know as well, that, you know, they have that radical revelation of Jesus and who he is.